Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a Gibson's Bookstore podcast. I'm Ryan, my pronouns are she, her.
I'm Joe and my pronouns are they, them.
Hi, Joe.
Hi. It feels like it's been a long time. I can't even remember what happened in February, to be honest.
Genuinely, me neither.
We did our Black History Month episode, but like the rest of February, no idea.
Flew by.
Yeah.
Blinked and it was over.
And it's almost the end of March now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Gibby's third birthday today.
Happy birthday, Gibby!
Yeah, he's an old man now. He's a full-grown menace. He's when I told my mom that, she was like, oh, I'm glad to see he's matured over the 3 years.
Rude.
And, you know, it's fair. He did bite through a jug of water just last night while I tried to get a flashlight because there was no power.
Gibson.
I picked it up and it splashed on me. I was like, yeah, it was down there for like 5 minutes, man.
Yeah, that tracks.
Couldn't just...
He's a menace.
He's a menace, but he's a menace. He's very cute and a grown-up now.
Aw, happy birthday, Gibby. What a guy. I'll have to put that in the newsletter.
Yeah.
Everyone say happy belated birthday to Gibby. Aw, buddy. Yeah, no, I feel like so much time has passed since we last recorded, and I've read like 10 million things.
Yeah, same.
I've been
reading a lot of things. I really had almost a goal this year of reading less.
I remember
like
you talking
slower,
about that. Yeah.
More, no, it's not happening. It's not happening. I've almost hit 50 books for the year, Ryan.
You know what? I think I have.
Yeah.
Wait, like no, that can't be true.
48, I think.
That can't be true. I can't be that far. Hold on. Because, yeah, I've been reading so much. There was a day I've read 40 books this year.
Yeah.
What is happening?
It's those audiobooks, man.
It's the audiobooks. There was a day this month where I had the day off and both my kids were at school and I listened to three audiobooks in one day.
Yeah. They go real quick.
I mean, I start them at 2x. So, you know, if it's like a 7-hour audiobook,
it's like nothing.
A couple hours, boom, done. And like there have been books recently that I have bumped up to like 2.5x just because of just the narrator, their speaking style is so clear that I can.
Yeah.
And I can still hear everything. Nothing's getting cut out because they're enunciating that well. They're doing that well that I'm like, 2.5.
Sometimes there's one audiobook app that we both use that sometimes when you like click out of it and go back, it will be back to 1.0 speed. And I'll be like, what is happening?
It's so
jarring. What's going on? This isn't the way humans speak. What are you doing?
It's so jarring. I truly, and this is not to like get onto a tangent about audiobooks because we do that enough as it is.
Yeah.
And we've had the discussion about audiobook speeds, but I swear to God, there are times where an audiobook will start and it will be like, Penguin Random House Audio presents. And I'm like, no one talks that slow.
and I appreciate that, like, that is something that people... There are people who need to process it at that speed, but I am just, like, I don't think I can listen to an audiobook at that speed.
No,
like,
I would lose my mind. I mean, I speed up the TikToks I watch. You know what I mean?
Like, same. Broken brain, millennial broken brains. I'll do, in grad school, the classes that were online, the video lectures, you could change the playback speed. And you know,
and as you should,
it sometimes
honestly, I did realize the other day because I was like, am I broken? I had the thought that I was reading a physical book And I was like, oh, in my head, I'm reading it as fast as the speed that I'm putting the audiobooks on. So I really do just read that fast.
Yeah. And that's how fast we talk. My friends talk.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's, yeah. I'm a 1.5 person. Mm-hmm. That is usually where I start.
That was,
yeah. If I'm at a 2.0, that usually means that there's like, either the audiobook narrator is like very clear or I'm looking to... if it's something for like a class or something that I'm just like, okay, let's just go
to skim it. Yeah, I was 1.5 for a really, really, really long time, and now I'm a 2x baseline. I don't know. It works for me, and I've read 40 books, and it's March. So
yeah, I looked it up. I'm at 49.
Oh my god!
And I had put my goal for the year at 75 because I was like, I'm gonna be like more contemplative, sit with the no self control.
That's, you know, it's valid. And it's funny because we're gonna talk about things that we've read in the last month, but also this episode we are going to talk about how we choose what we read, how we build our TBR, how we decide how many books we're going to read in a year, like all of that.
How we ignore our TBR. yeah, that's...
So that is the subject of today's podcast. So you'll get to hear all about our unhinged TBRs. Look forward to that.
Oh, it's upsetting.
Yeah.
So what have you been reading? Because my last book on my recently read is actually what prompted me to ask about you about your TBR stuff. Wonderful. So I have a good transition.
Very nice. I've read a lot of great stuff. Let's see. So I will just bust through a few that I read right at the end of February. I listened to Cutting Teeth by Chandler Baker, which was a very like funny, light horror novel, very kind of like suburban horror, very silly. Children vampires and like
cute.
The parents just kind of like bend over backwards to give their kids blood. It's very funny.
All right.
Patricia Wants to Cuddle by Samantha Allen, which I was very disappointed was not a Bigfoot romance.
I mean,
I really thought it was a Bigfoot romance based on the everything about it.
Yeah, what is it?
It's just a Bigfoot story. And it's quite funny if you go into it not thinking it's a Bigfoot romance. It's about a reality show that gets annihilated by Bigfoot.
Oh, okay. That is also fun. But yeah, I was thinking we were doing like the King Kong Fay Wray, but
me
like...
Me too. That's what I went in expecting and I was... disappointed that it wasn't that, but was actually pleasantly surprised by what it was, which is, yes, horrible, vapid. It's The Bachelor. Bachelor, and they get picked off one by one by a Bigfoot.
Okay, well, very that funny. Actually has probably moved up my list now because of that description, but
absolutely.
Okay, interesting.
Quite liked it. I finally listened to The Deep by Rivers Solomon, which is read by David Diggs.
Yeah.
Talk about something that had been on my TBR for a really long time, and I don't know why I hadn't listened to it before. Like, it had been sitting on my list for a really long time, and I finally just, like, had time. And it's only, I mean, it's, like, 4 hours long. It's very, very short. And it's quite lovely. Just sort of, like, it's, like, folklore. It's, like, black folklore about... Mm. Mermaids and sirens.
Yeah.
And it's dark and beautiful. And yeah, Rivers Solomon is an amazing writer. And it's read by David Diggs, which is really fun. We love him.
Yeah, that's, I have read other things by Rivers Solomon and really enjoyed it. So,
I can't remember if I talked about this last month, but I did finish The Book of Love by Kelly Link.
Oh, good. I don't think so.
Kate really loved that one. So if you want a really good summary, go look up Kate's staff pick review of it. She really, really loved it. I liked it a lot. It's a good like literary fantasy, but it's like contemporary and there's like... like deals with, it's kind of Faustian. It's not the exact Faustian deal, but there are
deals with devils or devil adjacent creatures, I think are what we're counting. Okay, that makes it so much more
I mean, it's very it's an interesting one. I think I would recommend it for people who like, I don't know, like Plain Bad Heroines and also The Night Circus. Like it's okay. This very, it sits in this very interesting place in my mind of like, what would I compare this to?
And I've never heard anything bad about Kelly Link.
She's amazing.
I've only heard good things about Kelly Link. And this is her first novel, right?
She's done short stories. And this is her first full length. And it's very good. It's very good. But I would say, like, if you want, like, a really good review for it, because I'm kind of just like, I read it in the end of February. Kate's staff pick is fantastic, her review.
She writes some great reviews. Check out other reviews that she has, because
Kate is awesome. She will be on the podcast at some point. She's a delight. You're gonna love her. I listened to The Antique Hunter's Guide to Murder by C.L. Miller, and this is a fun one. So this I would put in the same category as like Murder Your Employer by Rupert Holmes.
Nice.
In that it's like, you know, it's like your kind of average mystery, but there's this kind of like added whimsy to it. And what's fun about this one is that it is written, C.L. Miller is the like their parents are the antique Millers, so the ones who write the antique Miller guides, and the ones who created the Antiques Roadshow.
Oh my god! Okay,
that's the family.
Okay,
and so I believe the author uses she/her pronouns, and so she wrote this like murder mystery. I think someone dies. I think it's a murder mystery, but it's like a heist with antiques and it's very much set in the world of antiquing. It's very fun. It's like, it's a good light read, fun mystery, and has this like amazing connection to the actual like antiques world.
And I bet actually writes pretty accurately about it, because like sometimes you will read books and I will still enjoy them, but I'll be like, nope, you don't work in an archives.
Exactly. So that was a really fun one. And again, like I would say, like if you liked Murder Your Employer by Rupert Holmes, which if you haven't read it yet, it's fantastic. But if you're like into that type of mystery where it's like mystery with a little bit of fun, it's like having a little bit of fun with the genre, I think I would slot this in, same vibe. I read a romance novel called Happily Never After by Lynn Painter. It's delightful. The premise is so funny to me. So it's, there's this guy that you can hire. He's called an objector. And you can hire him to object at your wedding if you need an excuse to get out of your marriage, but you can't, for whatever reason, leave it yourself. And so, for example, people have hired him where it's like the couple, you know, wants to break up, but like, you know, his father is her father's boss. And so if they break up, like her father might lose his job.
Okay.
Right. Or she found out he's cheating on her and she wants to make a big scene, but she also like doesn't want to like blow up. Whatever the case may be, like there. And so it opens with this guy breaking up a wedding.
Sure.
And the bride, goes back and like gets drunk with her bridesmaids. She's having a great time, and he shows up at the room, I think, to just like collect final payment or whatever, and to like say goodbye. And he ends up like hanging out with them. They have like nothing happens, but like it's just kind of fun. And then like time goes by and she runs into him again, and there's lots of chemistry between the two of them. And so she is like, and I forget, there's like tropey reasons that they need to be scene together. It's kind of like a fake dating thing, but she's like, I will be an objector with you. Like, I'll go to this wedding with you.
Okay.
And so then they start doing it together. And so, like, it's these two people who basically are like, I don't believe in love for these reasons, right? She's been cheated on. He, like, has his own reasons. But then they're kind of, they're falling in love together. And it's very cute. And it's very funny. And I kept giggling at the idea of an objector. I wonder if that's a real, that's a real thing. I bet if you went on Craigslist, you could find someone who's like, give me like $300 and I'll end your wedding for you.
That's what, I'm going to hire you to do that at my wedding.
Just stand up. I'll be like, I object. Oh God. what else? I listened to The Hunter by Tana French. It's great.
Yes.
It's a Tana French novel.
It's
exactly what you want from a Tana French novel. Yeah. If you listen to the audiobook, it's even better because she's Irish, so it takes place in Ireland, and so the narrator is Irish, and it's amazing.
Incredible. One of our coworkers didn't know Tana French was Irish.
Yeah.
And because we were doing a St. Patrick's Day, just Irish author display, and I was like, that's
like part of it. Thing.
Yeah. Dublin Murder Squad.
To be fair, I think possibly her first book does not take place in Ireland.
No, it does, because that's the only one I've read.
So then, yeah, I got nothing.
I don't know. Is this one part of the Dublin Murder Squad, or is
it's like part standalone? Of a different series. Okay. It's like number two in a different series, but like you don't really need to.
It's a mystery series. It's a mystery.
You can read her books kind of in any order, because each one, similar to like romance series, you will meet the same characters, but different characters will be kind of headlining the different.
Yeah.
So you get enough context to be like, oh, I can tell that you are in this one sentence summarizing the previous book.
Yeah.
You know, like, I get it. I get the context.
Like, how I always tell people not to read Agatha Christie books in order, like, her series.
Yeah.
Like, don't do that.
Read the ones that sound interesting to you.
Yeah.
I finished Cosa by John Durgan.
Oh, yes. You were carrying that one around with you.
Oh, boy.
Lots of hair.
So much hair. It's... John is a local author. He lives like down the street from Gibson's, and he described this book to me as Rapunzel meets Drag Me to Hell, and I was like, sold.
thank you yes.
And it is a horror novel based on Rapunzel, which in and of itself, like, Rapunzel is a horrifying story.
Oh, yeah.
If you really think about, like, oh, this little girl is kidnapped and kept in a tower for her whole life, can't see the outside world. Like,
even the Disney version is kind of horrifying. It's like, horrific. It's not. Yeah. It's not a story that's easily.
No, she's kidnapped because maybe she has some magic power in her hair, and therefore the witch is like, you're mine now, and raises her as her own daughter. Like, it's horrifying. True to form, that is the premise. But the witch, to stay young, she doesn't just... Well, first of all, to get the power from... the hair, she has to eat it.
Ugh.
So gross. She also eats children.
I mean,
so she, yeah. It's real dark. It's real, real dark. And there was a point where I was reading it, and I was eating my lunch, and I was reading it, and I felt a hair in my mouth, which is not... that happens a lot. I have long hair. I always have a hair on my mouth, but it was like in the back of my throat already. And I was like, oh cool, this book is cursed. cool. So Cosa, it comes out in May. We are planning an event in June with John Durgan. You podcast listeners get the early scoop. This hasn't even been announced yet, but Paul Tremblay will also be at that event. And if all goes according to plan, Eric LaRocca will also be here.
Wow.
It's going to be a little New England horror panel. So things may still change. We haven't finalized the announcement yet, but keep an eye on our social media for that announcement. Let's see. What else did I read? Okay, so I read Rainbow Black.
Yes, me too.
By Maggie Thrash. Yep. Fantastic.
Yes.
We have an event with Maggie Thrash this week as you're listening to the podcast. Maggie will be in conversation with Margot Duehi, who is another local, mystery author. It's real, real good. Satanic Panic. It was very different from what I thought it was going to be going into it. But I loved it.
Yeah.
It's
in New Hampshire. I know that's a silly thing that I keep bringing up, but you never see books set in New Hampshire, especially not by people who have actually spent time. it's not set at a boarding school in New Hampshire.
Right.
What?
It's just
there's Concord. You're talking. Oh, I know what road you're on. Oh, wow. Okay. Which I know there are lots of people who are like, yes, my hometown is in lots of books, but we don't get that, guys.
That doesn't happen that often. COSA is also set in New Hampshire.
Nice.
Because, again, local authors. So it doesn't happen often, but when it does, it's very exciting.
It's very exciting. So, Satanic Panic in the 90s. Daughter of parents who run a daycare who are accused of satanic panic
things.
Yep.
And it follows the court case and her life growing up in the shadow of this thing that happened. Very, very good. Let's see, for the Jack of All Graves book club, I read Shudder by Ramona Emerson, which was very good. It's a fairly recent book, and she's an Indigenous author. And the main character is a crime scene photographer. She's a forensic photographer. She's the one, first on the scene, taking pictures of all the evidence and everything of the scene. And she can see ghosts. And so throughout this novel, there is one ghost in particular who is demanding that she solve their murder, and she's like, I'm just the photographer, I can't just walk up to my boss and be like, a ghost told me to do this thing. But it's very good. It's very gory. Great body horror, and just a very interesting setup. Each little chapter or section is at the beginning of the section, it tells you what camera it lists a camera, and so it's that camera is relevant to that chapter or whatever. And then at the last little chunk of the book, as things are you're getting the bigger picture, things are becoming more clear. Instead of a different camera, it's just showing the aperture changing. And so it's changing the focus to be more and more clear of what's going on. It's very clever. It's very clever. And so that's called Shudder. And she has the sequel coming out in October called Exposure.
Okay.
So looking forward to that.
All right.
I read a horror novel called Bless Your Heart by Lindy Ryan, which it is someone... It's someone took the teleportation pods from The Fly and they put a horror novel in there and didn't realize that a romance novel was also in there. And so the DNA was spliced together. And I want to be very clear. There is no romance in this book.
Okay.
It is not a horror romance novel.
Okay.
It's not.
Okay.
However, the vibe of the writing style, the way the characters talk, the way the narrator talks, the exposition, is the same vibe of a contemporary romance novel. And I don't know how else to put it, but it like, and so I loved it because I love contemporary romance and I love horror. And so somehow there's this, it's so like, I can't fully put my finger on it, except that it is a horror novel that is written like a romance novel, but without the romance.
I'm fascinated by this idea.
It even has, I don't know if we have it in the store, but it even has like a contemporary romance novel style cover. It has like the the cartoon illustration.
What? Okay. What's the title of it?
Bless Your Heart by Lindy Ryan.
Lindy Ryan. We need to, I need to, or I'll Google it. You look if we have it on the shelf. Oh, yeah. No, yes. Yep.
Right?
Yeah, it does. Okay. All right. Interesting.
I like, yeah. Anyway, it's very fun. I liked it. I liked it. It's got good body horror. It's vampires. It's set down south, and there's a family of women who own a funeral parlor, and they've kind of like owned it for a couple generations now, and come to find out it's okay, so I say vampire, it's really more like vampire slash zombies. It's like not one thing, it's more just like the dead rise, but they don't do the things that normally those creatures do. And they acknowledge that. They're like, no, these are not the like zombies from the movies. Like this is real and this is what they do. And so the this family of women, they know that sometimes the dead rise for various reasons. Maybe they had a traumatic death. Maybe they didn't like the way their burial went, what have you. And so they have taken it upon themselves to be sort of the ones who handle the death care, so that they're there in case anything happens. They can make sure that everyone has a, you know, respectful burial. Okay. They can try to prevent the dead from rising, but also they are like a little bit monster hunters and they know how to take them down if it happens. Huh. And so, yeah, it's, and so your protagonist is this young high school girl who finds all this out and is like, I'm sorry, what? Like, my mom and my grandmothers are monster hunters? And that's why we own a funeral parlor? And there's, you know, like, a new guy in school who's, like, very unique and interesting and kind of dark and, like, ooh, you know, it's fun. It takes place in, like, the, like, 1999, like, okay. 2000.
All right.
And so, interestingly, like, they reference Columbine because this guy, he's, like, he got basically bullied out of his previous school because everyone was like, oh, you're part of, like, the trench coat gang.
Oh.
And he's like, I wasn't, but cool, I guess.
Nor were the guys who did Columbine. Yeah. You know, yeah, we don't need to get into,
we don't need
the
to get into that, but
history of
yeah
weird misinformation.
So yeah, so it's fun. I liked it a lot. And then I absolutely devoured Funny Story by Emily Henry.
Oh yeah.
Again, and we'll talk about this a little bit when we get into the TBR, but this is one that I got the arc like weeks ago.
Yep.
When Sam finished it and was like, okay, your turn.
Sam read it in 10 seconds because...
And I put it on my shelf and I set it aside being like, I know that the second I start this, everything else is going to have to wait.
Yeah.
And that is what happened. But also I read it in 24 hours. Like I read it over in one day. Yeah. So, you know, it's fantastic. It's an Emily Henry. It's... Yeah. a couple break up weeks before their wedding because the guy comes home and he's like, turns out I'm in love with my female best friend, and she's like, yeah, the one you told me not to worry about. And he's like, yeah, we hooked up at my bachelor party. And she's like, yeah, okay, bye, I guess. And and so he runs off with his female best friend. And she's left alone. And also the ex-boyfriend of that girl mm-hmm. is left alone. And so those two move in to get, like, she goes and moves into his apartment because she's like, I'm in a city, like, I moved out here for him. I don't have family here. I don't have, like, nothing. I have a yeah. job, and he's taking the house because it's in his name. So I have nowhere to go. And so they become roommates. So she's now roommates with her ex-fiance's girlfriend's ex-boyfriend. and those two fall in love. And it's extremely cute.
They were roommates.
They were roommates. and it's got, like, a funny, like, fake dating plot where they're like, let's pretend. She, like, panics and says that he's her boyfriend. And so then he's like, well, let's just, like, make them both jealous and just pretend. And, like, we'll go to their, because then those two get engaged. Awful. And he's like, you can be my wedding date. it's great. It's Emily Henry. If you like Emily Henry, you'll like this one. It's fantastic. I will briefly mention Lost Man's Lane by Scott Carson at some point this week. Maybe it's up already. Maybe it'll be up tomorrow. Depends on my schedule. I interviewed Scott Carson, aka Michael Carita, about this book, Lost Man's Lane. So check your feeds for that. It is a supernatural thriller mystery set in 1999, bookended with Columbine and like Y2K stuff. The publicist pitched it to me as historical fiction.
yeah. I also have a book I want to talk about that is set in that time period. And yeah it's
yeah,
it's rough.
It's weird. But yeah, she wasn't wrong.
She's not wrong. It's just upsetting. Yeah.
But so I read that, interviewed Michael Carita, you know, writing as Scott Carson for that. He's delightful. It was a really fun interview. So that is either up or will be up in the next day or so. So keep an eye out for that. And then last but not least, I got to read the new Rachel Harrison.
Ooh.
Oh my God. I was like, I was at work and I was looking on Edelweiss, which is our kind of like database of everything, the bookseller database. And it's where we can like submit reviews and we can read advanced digital copies and we can pitch for events and all of that. And I was going through the event grids, looking to see if there were any authors that I wanted to pitch. I saw Rachel Harrison was on one of the event grids, and so I was so excited. And so, like, wrote this, like, feral pitch for her, and then noticed that the book was available to read.
Oof.
And I went, okay, drop everything. It's time to read this. And sure enough, I started it at, like, 4 o'clock at work and finished it first thing the next morning. Read it in one sitting. Loved it so much. Yeah. It is, in her own words, it is her horny vampire novel.
Incredible. Love that.
It is so good. Again, like, there's so much more to it. She really layers in cool themes and things like that. But on the surface, it is two best friends who go on a girls' weekend together and get vampired.
Girls' weekends don't go well in a Rachel Harrison book.
If you find yourself in a Rachel Harrison book and someone invites you on a weekend away, maybe don't go.
Just don't. Just don't do it.
Although in this case, I mean, like, you know, maybe you just need to learn how to take risks in life and
become a vampire. It happens.
Become a vampire. It's so good. I really, really love it so much. And Rachel Harrison is just an absolute delight. I adore her. And yeah, I pitched for an event with her. So everybody, fingers crossed. I think this one comes out in September. So
September 10th.
Yeah. So maybe she'll come here. For that, we're trying real hard. We're working on it. So everybody cross your fingers and toes for a Rachel Harrison event this fall. We'll see what happens.
That would be great.
I'm going to stop there.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I also have read a bunch of things. Yeah. So I started Tommy Orange's new book, Wandering Stars, which is really good so far. I'm maybe a third of the way through. And it is a follow-up to They're There. So
it's, it is. Okay.
It is. They are connected. Cool. So
that's cool.
Yeah. So if you were a fan of They're There, read it. It's fantastic. I'm really looking forward to finishing that one. It is currently on pause because it is the Trans Rights Readathon this week.
Yeah.
And I, as I said to Ryan, need to get an A in readathon and must read many, many trans books because that's just how I function. It's, you know, it's fine. So I have quite a few trans books I've read in the past couple days. I just started Love After the End, edited by Joshua Whitehead. It is an anthology of two-spirit and indigiqueer speculative fiction, and so it's science fiction, but it's focused on utopias. And Joshua Whitehead says in the introduction that they were focusing on utopias rather than dystopias because indigenous people have lived through the apocalypse. They've lived through they're living the dystopia, so yeah. They're imagining a future of a utopia.
Wow.
Which I thought was an interesting perspective. So I've only read one of the stories, but it was very good, about an AI rat.
Nice.
It was great. So then I finally read Pet by Akweke Emezi.
How was it?
It was good. It was very good. This is one of their YA novels. It is very intense. Mm-hmm. Like, it deals with child abuse.
Okay.
It is about a young trans girl who helps a monster or creature. This creature doesn't like to be called a monster, sorry. Uh-huh. Escape from her mother's painting.
Oh.
And it turns out this monster is hunting for a bad person in their world. And they live in a world where they've gotten rid of all the monsters, all the bad people who've done bad things to people.
Mm.
And it turns out maybe that isn't true. And now Pet, the creature from the painting, is here to catch one of these bad people.
Interesting.
It's very interesting. I think it does a good job of handling the topic for like a younger age group. I think like we have it shelved in YA. It's generally considered YA. Depending on the kid, like a lot of it reads a little bit middle grade.
Yeah.
But it's such an intense topic that I think it generally gets shelved a little bit higher up.
That makes sense.
I think they do a really good job of talking, like addressing it in a metaphorical and in a like way that is understandable to a younger audience.
Nice.
And then I have read a couple graphic novels, Mooncakes by Suzanne Walker and Wendy Zhu. That's a werewolf witch romance.
Ooh.
It's very cute. It's YA. Really like that one. I also read The Deep and Dark Blue by Nikki Smith, which is a youth fiction graphic novel that is set in a fantasy world of two twins. Their family is attacked and they have to go into hiding, so they hide away in a magical nunnery, basically.
Got it. Yep.
And they have to dress as girls, and it turns out one of these twins is a girl, in fact, and finds herself in this space. And it's really good magic and great illustrations. I also listened to River of Teeth by Sarah Gailey.
Oh, I don't know if I know this one.
Yeah. So this is like an early one. I will say it's kind of hard to find a physical copy, but you can get the audiobook on Libro FM.
Okay.
That is how I listen to it. It is her American Hippo book. It's, you know, the story about back in the early 20th century, there was a beef crisis.
Yeah.
And so there was a proposal to bring hippos over and have them live in Mississippi River Delta and be hunted for, or, you know, raised for meat. And, you know, that's a really bad idea, you guys.
Yeah.
Hippos are terrifying.
Oh my God. They're the deadliest animal.
They're very bad. And so this is, Sarah Gailey took that idea, set it about 50 years prior to this actual proposal. So it is high cowboy era, the cowboys ride hippos.
Oh my gosh.
And it's a group. It's not quite a heist, but it is a caper, a hippo caper that have to, gather a team to take, to address this caper or to take on the caper. And they, and, you know, the hippos do eat some people because, you know, they're hippos.
As they do.
But yeah, and it's very fun. It's it reminds me a little bit of, Upright Women Are Wanted, because that kind of, and it's a novella, it's very short, just kind of an idea.
Wow.
But it's very fun.
I do love, and there I is love a hippo story.
There is a sequel. there is a sequel called Taste of Marrow, I believe.
Oh, God. So great title.
Yeah, I may need to read that one as well.
Yeah.
And then my last of the books I've read so far for the Trans Rights Readathon, I read Idlewild by James Frankie Thomas, which is about two friends in high school right in the aftermath of 9/11. They go to a Quaker high school in Lower Manhattan, and they become kind of obsessed with each other.
Sure.
You know, yeah. It's a queer obsession book. I love that. And they just have that really intense relationship that queer kids sometimes have in high school that is hard to explain and hard to understand. And then they meet two boys in their school who they kind of also become fascinated with and start writing fan fiction about, which is not and it gets very intense, and they're all in musicals together, and they are the school's GSA, though they have renamed themselves the Invert Society. And it's just the four of them, and it's just one of those spiraling stories. And it is the two main teenagers are looking back on their on their high school years. So it's kind of them telling the story, and it's trans and queer and intense and not a happy story, but it's very interesting. It was very much that, this is historical fiction about a time that I clearly remember, even though the characters are, older than I was at that time.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, there we go. Yes, okay, and then run through a couple others real quick. Finally read The Angel of Indian Lake by Stephen Graham Jones. I listened to it.
Which is out today.
Which is out today.
On launch day. Oh, woo! My God, it's here.
It's here. It's so good. It's gory and wonderful. And just as an incentive to listen to the audiobook, there might be a special guest narrator of, a king of horror. Can we put in that? I'm sorry, that was terrible.
this young upstart.
No one's ever heard of
that. You may have read something, or you may have heard of him. His name is Steve.
So that was very cute when that part came on. But
yeah, doesn't he's like the teacher or something?
He's the teacher. Like the, yeah. It's writing like very nice things about Jade. It's so cute.
My heart.
Yeah. So yes, that comes out today, or it's already out. It's already out. If you're listening to this, it's
March 26th. It's here. We got signed copies.
I know.
So exciting.
And then I will lastly mention Breathe, Journeys to Healthy Binding. It's a graphic novel by Maya Kobabi. I never know how to say their last name, despite having to talk about them constantly, because they are the author of Genderqueer and, you know, the most banned book. And Sarah Petzmeyer. Mm. And it is based off of interviews done with a variety of trans people and their experiences with chest binding and kind of how they got to a healthy place and talking about, and then they're like, and is lots of it is advice, and there are some like worksheets too of like working through like, okay, how am I feeling? Is this a good day to bind? Should I take a break? What's and I think it's really good, really important. I think, you know, it's going to be really helpful to a lot of people who, because like many of my generation of trans people learned about binding from Tumblr that, you know, I knew Ace bandages weren't great.
Right.
that was an improvement over past generations. But beyond that, like, so talking about the different like ways and like when maybe is, you know.
That's such a good resource.
Yeah. It's good. So that one is not out yet. It's coming out this year, and cool. I don't have the date off the top of my head, but I read an advanced copy.
Awesome.
And then to transition us into our TBR conversation.
Yeah.
I read the book I think may have been on my TBR the longest of any book.
Mm.
And that was Coraline.
Yay!
By Neil Gaiman, for those, if anybody isn't sure. I'm pretty sure I bought that book in middle school.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah. And I don't know, I got distracted for 20 years. It's, you know, it happens to the best of us. I don't know. And I that copy may still be in my parents' house. I don't have it, but
it's probably the cool original cover.
It's
too.
Probably the cool. It is the original cover, the one that I bought. I don't know if it is still in my parents' home or not, but so I finally read Coraline, and it was great. I loved it. I watched the movie. The movie is also very good. And it was what, you know, I don't have any excuses. It was exactly what a middle grade horror by Neil Gaiman should be, and that is fantastic. And I just creepy and weird.
Oh man, the other mother,
the buttons
for eyes. It's so good. I love Coraline.
I ultimately read it because a middle grade horror was on the Book Riot Read Harder Challenge. And I was like, you know what? There's one that I've been meaning to read for 1,000 years.
You know?
I don't know.
There are some books that they just wait.
They just sit
and wait.
They're very patient. It's good for them, honestly.
Truly. So let's talk about. So we've been throwing around TBR a lot. That does stand for to be read.
Yeah, this is.
I think most people know what a TBR is at this point.
Yeah, if you're listening to a book podcast, you usually would know.
But just in case, yeah. It's a to-be-read. Often people will say my TBR pile, so my to-be-read pile. Those of us who work in a bookstore, we don't have a TBR pile. We have TBR bookcases.
Yep. I have a TBR bookcase and piles that have become just spread across the floor by my cat.
Yeah.
Because that's, he likes to sit on TBR piles and then like surf them over. So.
Absolutely. Because,
you know, never a dull moment.
Never peace. And so, yeah, so my TBR quote unquote pile, I have a library cart, like a book cart in my bedroom, which, you know, I have said, this is my immediate TBR, meaning these are the books that, like, I want to read next. So I have them next to my bed so that when I finish one book, I can reach over and pick up another one. Have I picked up a book from that cart in the last year?
No,
absolutely
not.
I have not. No. Not one single one.
Why would you? Would you?
No, absolutely not.
I also have a library cart. I stole this from you because I was running out of space on my TBR bookshelf. Like, it's a three shelf bookcase.
Yeah.
Ran out of room. I was like, oh, this is great. And yeah, have I touched them since I put them on there? No, of course not. Of course not. I also have the pile of books next to my bed.
Oh, yeah.
That's a separate, I got this ARC, I set this down, and now it lives there. And I'll be like, oh, yes, I do want to read that book. Oh, yeah, it's in that pile next to the bed. It's well organized.
Yeah, on the floor next to the cart are two books that I brought home recently that I was like, oh, yeah, I want to read both of these soon. And I had, now, here's something interesting. I had those two books plus the new Emily Henry. I brought all three of them upstairs because I was like, I want to read one of these next.
Yeah.
I don't know which one. And I sat on my bed and I read the back of all three of them and I ultimately went with the Emily Henry. And then I finished the Emily Henry. Did I pick up either of the other two books?
No,
I did not. No. I just left them on the floor next to my bed. So I have my cart. I don't really at this point have TBR shelves because I have a wall of books in my basement, and so I put as much as I could on there. So I did used to have TBR shelves, and then I just pulled my books from everywhere that I could and put them onto my wall of books in the basement. So I don't have that anymore. I don't have a TBR bookcase right now. Because they're all kind of mixed in, but I do have my TBR cart, which a lot of the books on there are horror novels by people that I know personally.
Yeah.
And so I put them there so that I will read them. And I haven't yet.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel very bad because I see these people somewhat frequently. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I haven't read your book yet. I don't tell them that, but, you know.
But you think it.
I think it.
You think it. Yeah, most of mine on my cart are things that it's like, Joe, you paid real money for this. This isn't an ARC. You paid real money for it because you were going to read it as soon as you finished whatever you were in the middle of. And that was 3 years ago. If you don't read this book, oh, my God. You have to. I do see some people like on TikTok being like, okay, if I don't read, I'm putting all of these books in a cart. If I don't read them by the end of this year, I have to get rid of them. And I'm like, I cannot.
No, I couldn't.
No.
I can't do that. Part of the reason I can't do that is because we are in the unique position of having access to so many more books than most people. Like infinite books.
Like infinite.
And infinite books that are not out yet.
Truly, I'm looking at like my list of books that I talked about. Of the books I talked about, I did not pay money for any of them.
No.
Love After the End, I did buy that one. All the rest of them have been ARCs or library books.
The only one of all the books that I talked about, the only one I paid for was Shudder.
Yeah.
Rest were free advanced reader copies or copies handed to me by the author.
Yeah. Like, it's... Yes, we have a lot of books, and that sounds like bragging, but it also feels like I'm drowning a lot of the time. Yes,
and I want to talk about this a little bit in that, like, because it's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's amazing to have so many books at my fingertips at all times. It is wonderful. Part of our job is also to review these books.
Yeah.
And that comes with deadlines sometimes. Mm-hmm. Now, if it's just, oh, I'm going to make this a staff pick. Okay, fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
But if you want to, say, try to get a review up so that it can be submitted for the Indie Next list,
mm-hmm.
that's like 3 or 4 months in advance.
And you usually don't get ARCs like that. Like, you might get it 5 months in advance, and you have to have the Indie Next in within a month.
Right.
And it's like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Better read this right now if I want to have a shot at nominating it for Indie Next. I need to read this immediately.
And like, Ryan and I are both at a point where, like, sometimes we'll get sent things by publishers being like, hey, can you read this and give me a review? And that's a whole other, I mean, you do have that a lot more than I do, but whenever that happens to me, I'm like, oh God, oh God, okay.
Yeah, like, you know, we'll get a bound manuscript with a handwritten note by the publisher, sometimes by the author, saying, hey, I think you'll really like this. Would you read it and send a review to this email address?
Yep.
And so there's certain things that when they fall into your lap, it is drop everything and read this immediately.
Yeah.
For me, there are certain authors that is the case, right? Rachel Harrison, Josh Malerman, those are two authors that Grady Hendrix, if I get an advanced copy of their book, I drop everything and read that in that instant. It doesn't matter what else I'm reading.
Yeah.
I'm going to read this immediately and I'm going to have a review like the next day.
Yeah.
So then I have ones that are kind of the next tier down, which are, I'm extremely excited about this. But I have other deadlines that I need to finish, and then I'm going to read this.
Yeah.
So, like, I have the next Stephen Graham Jones book, which comes out in July. I Was a Teenage Slasher. I read the first chapter. I was like, yes, this is amazing. I have to finish another book because I have an interview. So I have to finish the book for the interview, and then I'm going to dial in on this one. Yeah. Right? So it's like, okay, I'm like... extremely excited to read this book, but I do have a deadline that I need to meet first, and I know that if I start just focusing on the Stephen Graham Jones, everything else is going to fall away. So there are things like that. There are deadlines for, you know, again, like, I do author interviews, I read the books before I do the interview. I at least try to get halfway, maybe two-thirds of the way through the book before I am actually interviewing the author. And then if I haven't finished the book before the interview, I do still try to finish the book after the interview. So every author that you've heard on this podcast, I have read that book, which is something that I take pride in. It's something I enjoy doing. It is also a little bit of homework.
Yep.
And you may notice that there have been fewer interviews so far this year than there were last year. Last year, I burned myself out a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't remember how many interviews I did last year, but I front loaded a ton. I did a ton of interviews, like back to back to back to back to back. and it was a lot of fun and very stressful.
Yeah.
And I found myself kind of in this interesting place of like, you know, I only request interviews with authors who their book sounds interesting to me, or yeah. it's an author that I already like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about these books. But by the same token, if the only things I'm giving myself permission to read are for interviews, that then it becomes, well, reading is homework, so I just don't want to do it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I try to balance. And so this year, I've scaled way back. You know, I have an interview next month. I really don't have much scheduled so far, which initially I was like, oh no,
yeah.
I'm not doing as many interviews. Like, I'm not getting offered as much. And I'm taking a step back. This is okay. Because I have taken on more responsibility at the bookstore in the last year. And mm-hmm. so it's a good thing to balance.
Yeah.
So if you've noticed there have been fewer author interviews, that's a big piece of it, is that I burned out last year and I needed to take a step back a little bit.
And yeah, I feel like I've been kind of doing a similar thing. I don't do the author interviews. I do run the book club at Gibson's. I'm also run a Shakespeare book club for my personal time, which means I have to read a book for book club, which aren't always my type of book, so I like have to carve out time for that. And then I reread a Shakespeare play that I've already read, and then read like 150 pages of criticism, which is my choice.
That is
my choice.
That is something you do.
It is still a I have not started reading for the one in April yet. And I have taken I've slowed down a little bit on my ARC reading. Mm-hmm. I will be honest. There were a couple advanced copies that I have that I am very excited about, and I feel lightly guilty mm-hmm. that I have not read them yet, but I was putting too much pressure on making sure that I read things as soon as possible, that mm-hmm. I was one of the first people reviewing
yeah.
that book.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fun.
Right.
And, like, that's not to say I didn't enjoy these books and whatever, but, like, reading has become more homework.
Yes.
Lately, and I was like, okay, just chill.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Like that, I had an arc of the Tommy Orange book, and I am now reading it. It is out, like,
mm-hmm.
published. I have an arc that doesn't even have a cover on it.
Yeah.
I've had it for a while, but just being like, hey, it's cool. Just read whatever you feel like reading right now. It's not, you're not betraying these other books. You're not
doing, which
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think
it is, it can be hard to rewire your brain
mm-hmm.
a little bit. But I mean, so there's books that they're on our TBR for various obligations, right? Whether it's a deadline or an interview or something to that effect. But the other books on our TBR are there for our own desires.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about like, are you, when you are, so do you have like an active TBR list, or are you an in the moment reader?
I'm more of an in the moment reader. I usually have a TBR list in my head mm-hmm. of, okay, this, then this, then this. Okay. Don't follow it very often. Sure. I do technically have like a TBR, they call it your TBR pile on StoryGraph.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I will add to sometimes. Mm-hmm. But it also is all of the books that I have added since I was a sophomore in college.
Yeah.
So there are just so many books that sometimes I'll go through because it'll show you some stuff on your TBR list and you're like, I have no idea what that is.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Oh, yeah. No, I don't need that on there. But that isn't super helpful to me anymore because it's so long. And I do have the cart that I try mm-hmm. to put some stuff on. I think also having doing reading challenges helps hone that in. It does also add to my TBR because there are things that I'm like, well, I wasn't planning to read a book about whatever, but now I am. Yeah, I don't read manga, but I'm going to because that's what we just won on the Book Riot.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it'll, yeah, those tend to help me focus in a little bit. But then there are things like the trans rights readathon, and suddenly I'm completely off track. Mm-hmm. And will I ever get back on track? Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah, that's a drop everything and read right now.
Yep.
And that's so valid. I also don't do a lot with TBR lists. My Storygraph TBR is so unhinged because, again, it is from, I mean, whenever I started my, you know, Goodreads account back way back in the day in college and then imported everything to Storygraph. So there's so much YA, so many classics that I'm like, do I want to read that? I don't know. Lots of Stephen King on my TBR. Like, sure. I don't know.
At one point, I added every Agatha Christie book to mine.
I think at one point I just
was doing? That's
going down the line, ding hitting dong. Yes. Like, I don't. So I don't. I will admit, I have not added much to my Storygraph TBR in the last few years because I don't look at it. So it doesn't really matter. I do have on Libre FM. I have a to listen tag.
Ooh.
So when I'm going through each month and I'm downloading the new advanced listening copies that we get as booksellers, you know, I'll be adding them all to my account, and then I'll go through and I'll download ones that I'm like, yeah, this looks interesting. And then if I see one that is really like, no, I really want to listen to this soon, I will tag it with my little to listen, and it puts it in a folder. Okay. So that then when I finish an audiobook and I'm like, what do I want to listen to next? I open up that little folder and I scroll through there and I pick from there.
Okay.
And I try to go through, like, I have a scary amount of audiobooks on Libre FM.
Yep. Yeah.
And so I will sort them. I'm a big mood reader.
Yeah.
And so I will sort them by whatever genre I think I want to read next. And I will go through all of them, and if there are ones that I haven't already tagged as to listen, but I'm like, oh, actually, I have learned more about this author or whatever.
Yeah.
And now I do, I will add it. So I try to go through fairly regularly. So my Libre FM to listen folder is actually pretty up to date and pretty spot on. And I'm pretty good about actually listening from there. I do check there first.
Yeah, I will do that. It's similar thing. I don't do the tags, but I will download it if it's a and you can do a tag that's just like downloaded. what you've downloaded, and I'll be like, oh yeah, that book.
Yeah,
guess I should.
Yeah, which is honestly, that's how I picked Deep by Roger Solomon. It was that it had been in my to listen folder for a long time, and I was like, oh yeah, I can do that in a day.
Yeah.
But so. And then, all right, so how do I pick? Yeah, I don't have, like, a running list of things that I'm like, I want to read that. I'm very much a mood reader. And unless I have a reason to read something, like for a book club or for an interview, I'm usually reading ARCs. Usually, like 99% of my reading is the publisher just sent me this, so I'm gonna read it now. I have to kind of force myself to read backlist, and I told myself this year I was going to read more backlist, which is why I put so many of my friends' horror novels on the cart in my room, because I was like, I was like, gonna try to challenge myself to, for every, you know, couple of ARCs that I read, I was gonna try to read a backlist.
Yeah.
It's all well and good to say, but in practice, has not. happened at all. I don't know. There's something so shiny and new mm-hmm. with an arc. I get mm-hmm. so excited by arcs.
Yeah.
That I have so many books in my home. So many. Terrifying amounts of books in my home. And yet, I don't remember the last time I went down to my wall of books mm-hmm. and actually picked a book from the shelf.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I've ever done that, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's just where they go to live.
Yeah.
So when I'm picking books to read, I'm, like I said, I'm a big mood reader. And what I mean by that is I either want to be terrified or romanced.
Yep. But
and sometimes it's first one, then the other. And then sometimes it's, nope, I'm going on a romance kick. I'm going to read 5 romance novels yep. in a row. And sometimes it's a horror kick and I'm going to read 5 horror novels in a row. Sometimes I'm reading both simultaneously. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's very much like I finish a book and then I go, when I finish a book, I immediately start the next book.
Yeah.
So it's like, what am I in the mood for in this moment right now?
Right now. What do I feel like reading?
So, yeah. I buy a lot of books here. And so you'd think I would read more things that have already been published, considering how much money I spend here. But,
yeah. Well, like that. So I bought a couple new books in the past few weeks. And I've held off on buying a couple others. But no, because like I will be a mood buyer too. I'll be like, oh, yeah. I do want to read this next. Mm-hmm. This will be next. But then when it comes time for next, I'm like, well,
but what about this other thing? This other book, yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. It's easy to get distracted. And I do think that, at least for me, some of, like, I think TBRs are a great idea and like having things that you want to read. I do sometimes think we put too much pressure mm-hmm. and like obviously there is a financial pressure when you're buying books.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But like there's it's okay. And if you bought a book and you end up not wanting to read it, like it is okay.
It's okay.
You can probably you might be able to resell it. You can also donate it. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Like again, yeah. You know, money is a thing you don't want to just buy yeah. wildly, but like it is okay if between the time you buy a book and the time you get around to it, you've lost interest. It does happen.
I mean, buying books and reading books are two very distinct hobbies.
Yeah.
They sometimes go hand in hand, but not always. A lot of the books that I buy are just finished copies of books that I read as an arc and loved. And mm-hmm. so I just want the final copy too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm a book collector. You know, I don't necessarily want all the fancy editions of everything. You know, but yeah, I'm probably gonna buy the signed Stephen Graham Jones book, even though I have a signed bound manuscript of that book. I'll probably also, I don't even think I have finished copies of the first two, but I might buy the signed hardcover just because it's exciting.
I have the other two in hardcover, so I need to,
you can at least finish the set out. I think I have the other two as paperbacks or arcs. I don't know, but that's like, that's just who I am as a person. I get excited by the shiny new book and I buy it, and and I know this about myself. And I also know that if a book is in my home, it's on my TBR.
Yeah.
Will I ever get to it? I don't know. But if I own it in some format, it's on my TBR.
It's on my hypothetical TBR. So, okay, I want to ask, what book do you think has been on your TBR the longest?
This is a great question. And it's funny because I did go to Storygraph and I looked up my actual TBR and sorted it just to see. Oh, God,
now
see.
I kind of want to do that.
But it was very convoluted. Like, yeah. It was very, I was like, well, this is on there, but I don't actually want to read it. If I had to guess, it would probably be like either a classic,
mm-hmm.
you know, like a book that I should have read in high school and everyone else seems to have read it in high school and then I never did. Right. Like, yeah. Like, here's an admission that I can't remember if I've said out loud on the podcast or not. I've never read Animal Farm.
Okay.
And it's on my TBR. And it probably is one of, if not the longest, right? And it was because, like, while everyone else was reading Animal Farm, I read 1984. Like, I was just in a different class.
Yeah.
And so there's things like that. There's definitely classics on there that I'm like, yeah, I should read that at some point. Will I? I don't know. Lots of Stephen King. I really don't read Stephen King because he doesn't need me to. He doesn't. People don't need me writing reviews of Stephen King books. So, like, lots of his. I think I've only read, like, 3 or 4 Stephen King books, probably, total.
Yeah. I'm about that.
Yeah. But, like, there isn't. Like, I can't think of one that I'm like, oh, I have been meaning to read this book for years and years and years and years. Honestly, the one that comes closest to being the someday I will read this book, I will finish it, I will start it, and I will read the whole thing, and then I will finish it. The only one that comes to mind is House of Leaves.
Yeah, that tracks. And I definitely have I have a very fraught relationship with Ulysses by James Joyce.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Because I feel like I should read it.
Mm-hmm.
And I, for a very long time, let that guide me to, I have to read it.
Ah.
And I read about half of it.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, I've read a lot of Ulysses. I just haven't read all of it in order.
Fair.
Which in order, but and I have now taken it off of my currently reading on, like, it was my currently reading on Goodreads and then on Storygraph for 5 years.
Oh, yeah,
it was on there for a really long time, and I finally it was a big moment to be like, no,
yeah,
we're setting it aside, but I still own it. Will I end up going back to it at some point? Likely.
Probably,
likely. Because
yeah.
I think it's going to haunt me.
Yeah.
And I don't like modernists, generally. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big generalization. That's not completely true. But, modernism isn't my thing. But I don't want James Joyce to be able to beat me.
That's fair.
I don't, because I've tried. I think is almost worse.
Yeah.
I will never read Infinite Jest, but I've never tried.
Yeah.
It's not because it's better than me. It's because I'm choosing not to.
You're making that conscious choice.
I'm making
that
choice. Whereas if I let Ulysses be unfinished, then I...
Yeah.
And that is a book, I think,
that's
like,
me.
Has
yeah,
kind
that's
of been sitting
yeah.
there that's like...
Mm-hmm.
Just
stares at you.
I just need to finish. Maybe once I don't feel I'm not a bookseller, if I go work at a library and I can just read Ulysses for 5 months straight, I'll do that, and then I'll just be like, goodbye. Thank you, Joyce. Goodbye.
Farewell.
Done. Did it.
Good. Guinness or something.
Drink a Guinness and tell every man I went to grad school with that they're not better than me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I feel the same way about House of Leaves. It was a big moment for me to take it off of my currently reading.
Yeah. Yeah.
I leave things on my currently reading for so long. Every once in a while, I'll be like, I'm not reading 9 books right now. I'm only reading 6. And I'll look at Seymour and I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I am still technically kind of sort of reading Master and Margarita. Sorry, Joe.
See, and that one I completely get. That also feels, that's a white whale book. That's a,
yeah.
That's a, you know, maybe someday.
Someday.
I was very glad that I had the deadline of the book club because, like, it made me do it and actually read it, and I enjoyed it. But, like, it's one of those books that's complicated enough. And I think that is, you know, Ulysses or House of Leaves, really convoluted. So they're easy to be like, okay, I just need a second. And then that second lasts 5 years.
That's what happens is that when I am actively reading House of Leaves, I'm enjoying it. I genuinely am. I like it when I'm reading it. But then I read something and I need to process it for a minute. And then I put it down and I just don't pick it up again.
Yeah.
Because it takes effort. And I don't love having to put effort in when I'm reading, because I want to just read for fun.
And sometimes I want to put effort in, but it's very, again, in this mood reading thing, that is often my thing rather than, you know, being scared or romance is I'm like, okay, do I want to think a lot or do I want just fun?
Yeah.
Okay, this is going to sit over here until I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
And that may be years.
It'll be a very long time.
I have a habit of buying used books at, like, used book sales. There's always one at the library in the summer. Mm-hmm. And they're, like, you know, a hardcover is 50 cents or something.
Yeah.
And I'll be just like, well, I'll probably want to read this Margaret Atwood book at some point.
Probably someday.
So it's just going to live here, and I'm not going to get rid of it because, like, probably.
Yeah.
And I have some, like, there's also a thing of my wanting to read all of the Booker winners ever. So I have some Booker books that I just, like, they've been there forever. They're going to be there, you know.
Yeah.
Before I go, I might do it. Who knows?
You might. And, yeah, so... And, like, I feel like we've kind of referenced this a little bit, but, like, I know that some people, like, organize their TBR, like, very specifically. Mine is my immediate TBR and then everything else.
Everything else, yeah.
And my immediate TBR, I mean, it honestly changes daily. I really tried with my little cart, but... Really, it's what's in my bag, what's on my windowsill, what's on the floor next to my bed. I'm just going to grab something at random and see if I want to read that.
Yep. And sometimes I'll read a first chapter and be like, nope.
Oh, yeah.
I thought I wanted to, and no. And it's not even that it's a bad book or not a book for me. It's just not that moment. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I did that recently with something. I don't remember what it was, but... And it doesn't really matter. But it was that type of thing where I was like, I'm going to really like this at some point, but this is not the vibe right now. Yeah. And I just, like, put it down and I was like, I'm not taking it out of the TBR because I do think I will like this. But, like, right now, not the vibe. So, yeah, I don't really organize my TBR. Like, I've seen, like, cool things where people who admittedly have fewer books than we have, where they'll do almost like a blind date with a book for themselves.
Yeah, I've seen that. And that's cool. Very cute.
And that's very cute, but I am too much of a mood reader
for that. I would open it and be like, actually, I guess I need to open another one, yeah. I guess, because that one's not it.
I'm the type where, like, if I did that, because I was like, oh, you could even do, like, randomized, just, like, number them.
Yeah.
One to whatever, and, like,
And they grab out of a hat. I've seen people do that.
I'm the type, I would get irrationally angry, and then I would just never read that book out of spite. Like, because it just would be like, no, it angered me in the moment, therefore I can never read it. Like,
I would just keep opening them until I was like, oh, look what I got. Okay, it's the book I wanted to read.
So that wouldn't work for me. Yeah, so I really honestly wouldn't even necessarily say that I have a physical TBR as far as, like, any sort of organization. It's like,
I have books I haven't read yet, but I'm unwilling to get rid of.
Oh, yeah.
That's, like, kind of what my TBR shelf is, like, yeah. These are books I would like to read. I'm not going to, paid for them, or I have them. I'll get to them at some point. I'm leaving them on the shelf. Mm-hmm. But when,
I mean, I have ARCs that I got at, like, the first NEBA conference I went to that are, like, signed and personalized. And they're from so long ago that I was still the YA person.
Yeah.
And so they're, like, YA books that, yeah, they sound pretty good. But I'm like, but I don't want to read YA right now. Like, I want to read a horror novel. So it's just, but I can't get rid of them because they mean something to me. Like, there's still a nostalgia or something there. And they do still sound good. What's nice is that as my kids get older, I can start being like, oh, let's read this together. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'll be able to chip away at some of the YA books that just stare at me from my YA section. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'll read you at some point. But so there's that. I mean, do you ever, I find I only take things off of my amorphous TBR if I have found out something problematic about the author or the book.
Yeah, I will. So I have been actually going through a lot of my books, mm-hmm. and I would say it's mostly the ones that I am donating, whatever, you know. When I say getting rid of, I'm not throwing them in the trash, guys. I just mean, like, various ways they're going somewhere else. A lot of them are books that I have ended up with incidentally, whether mm-hmm. it's like a quick, oh, this is 50 cents at a sale, oh, it's a little free library, an ARC, whatever. But mm-hmm. I do take books off sometimes where I'm just like, this has been there too long, I don't care about this topic anymore. So that definitely happens. But yeah, I mean, definitely when there are things that come up about authors that will motivate me to be like, okay, I am selling these right now.
Yeah.
Like, actually.
Yeah. And as far as, like, actually passing along physical books, like, I, you know, every year I build my giant book tree mm-hmm. in my basement out of lots and lots and lots of my books. That forces me to reorganize my books every year when I take it down.
Mm.
And it forces me to, I'm handling basically every book that I own, or the vast majority of them are, you know, in my hands at some point. And so that is a really good opportunity for me every year to go through, I call it the annual culling of the books. Which, you know, the first few times that I did it, I got rid of like 150 books. Now it's like, I might get rid of 10 because I'm much more aware of what I'm bringing in to my home.
Yeah.
But that is, again, like, this past year when I did it, I got rid of a few books, but it really was only like, oh, these are really, like, it's YA books that are already out of print. Like, I got them early in my bookselling career. They're already out of print. They're outdated. They're, you know, maybe there's representation in them, but it's not necessarily good representation. I'm never going to read it, and I don't think my kids will like it.
Yeah.
You know, when they get to that point, because it's far enough outdated. Like, it was a very specific period in time, or whatever the case may be.
2012 YA is a very specific
thing. Very specific. So, really, I only got rid of, like, one box of books this year. And we have, like, a swap shop at our, like, transfer station, and so I'll bring ARCs there usually. Like I said, like, if I own a physical book, if it's something that I've paid for, it's either something that I've already read and loved, or it's an author who I love and I will read it at some point, something like that. If it's an arc, it's on my TBR. Like, I'm probably, if I have brought it into my home and I have kept it, I haven't passed it along to a coworker or whatever, then yeah, I consider it to be on my TBR and I will read it at some point. And so, yeah, if it survives the annual culling of, or, you know, then it stays. But if I find out something problematic about the author, like, yeah, just get rid of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
TBRs are weird and hard, and organizing reading is hard.
It's hard. It's hard when you're a mood reader. It's hard when
yeah,
you're just like,
can't imagine just planning.
I'm amazed by people who are like, I'm gonna read this and then this and then this. I'm like, what?
What? How?
What do you mean?
How?
I'm reading like 6 books simultaneously, and you know, and then I'm gonna read whatever the publisher happens to send me that I get excited for. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm gonna read whatever's shiny and new that's calling my name. But if you have a TBR and it's incredibly organized and cool, I want you to tell us about it. And if you have like a cool way that you like shelve your TBR or like store your TBR, or if you do something like a blind date with a book of your TBR or whatever, like, send us pictures. I want to see your TBR. Or if it's super chaotic like mine and it's like piles all over your house, I also want
to
see that.
No one's allowed to see the piles in my house. They're too chaotic. Yeah. It's too much.
Mine are... My books go through a journey, right? So they, I get an arc here at the store. They send me an arc. It goes into my bag. Eventually, I will take it out of my bag at home, and I will put it in one of two places. It either goes on this little shelf at the top of my stairs, and basically in my living room, or, which is, I say shelf, it's like a cutout in a wall.
Okay,
it's like,
sure.
It's like a window, but there's no glass. It's just a hole in a wall. And I will put it there, or I will put it on the windowsill at the bottom of the stairs leading up to my bedroom. And it will live there until my husband gets fed up. And then it will go either upstairs to my bedroom or downstairs to the wall of books, where I may or may not ever notice it again.
So when I get an arc, I take it out of my backpack and set it on my bed. And then I sleep next to it for a while until it falls off my bed. And then it sits next to my bed for months, and then I get tired of having so many books next to my bed that I clean.
Yeah.
I don't know what that mental illness is called, but my God.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can relate. I feel that. I have just so many piles, but I was proud of myself. I bought a new bookcase recently that I turned it into my horror hall of fame, and so I put all of my favorite horror novels on there, which opened up a ton of room on my wall of books. So, oh, and I bought myself a second book cart for my basement. I don't really know why. It was there. I saw it.
Maybe
this time it'll work. And so I actually have room. I can actually, like, put things on the shelves right now. And so that's been, like, my daunting project of, like, I know I need to reorganize down there. True. And so I haven't for weeks. Yep. But I have stacks and stacks of books that I'm like, no, they have a home. I just haven't gone down there yet. My excuse has been that it's too cold to be in my basement for too long, which is fair. That is true. I could turn the heat on, but that, you know.
But then you'd have to do something down there.
I'd have to be down there and organize my books. And I do enough of that
here.
Here.
Yeah. So
So for now, they're just in piles, and it's all good.
It's all fine.
But, you know, this is the life of a person who has access to infinite books. Because that doesn't even count all the digital copies that I literally bought a whole iPad just so that I could read digital copies on. Because in addition to the physical ARCs and the Libra FM ALCs, we also have access to like ebooks, but digital ARCs. And so, yeah, that's the other. Yeah. Last night I was like, oh, well, I finished the Emily Henry. I will pick one of the other two books from the three that I brought up specifically. And then I looked at those two and I went, no, I don't really want to read either of those. And so I just picked up my phone and started reading on Edelweiss.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what I meant to do at all. I was supposed to not be looking at a screen. Hey. The whole point was I was going to not look at a screen. I was going to read a physical book in bed, not on a screen. But instead, here we are.
Here we are indeed.
So, yeah. Yeah. You know, bookseller problems. It's
bookseller problems.
It's fine.
But yeah, please tell us about your TBRs.
I want to know all about it. I want to see pictures. We can put them on Instagram and we can all commiserate with our...
Yeah.
Giant TBRs. And if you're participating in other reading challenges, whether it be our lay down reading challenge, or if you're doing the trans readathon, or if you're doing the book riot reading challenge, or something else, feel free to tell us about that too.
Yeah, because
I find those fascinating. I love a reading challenge. I think it's a really good way to expand your reading. So tell us about that if you're doing any of that. Okay. We can wrap up now. We've talked about our TBRs long enough. Time to go home and read. A brief reminder about our partnership with our buddies over at Libra FM. Listeners who are new to Libra FM can receive 2 digital audiobooks for the price of 1 credit. Just go ahead and use that code LAYDOWN at checkout when you start a new membership. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. For a shoppable list of all the books we've discussed during this episode, you can click the link in our show notes or go to gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on most of them, and all of those links will be in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye!